And we're back. Folks, welcome to Election Profit Makers, your guide to winning and losing money on political outcomes and current events. My name is Kid Midas, the original Wave Rider, and I'm joined on the line by Long John Silver.
Hey, buddy.
The famous pirate.
Yes.
John, it's me. How are you?
Good. How are you doing?
Good. We were talking in our last episode about the Trump hush money trial. Hush, hush. Little kitty cat pitter-pat feet, and how he was falling asleep. And we had said that, or I had said at least, that I kind of related to that, because I, now that I think about it, I would probably use sleep as an avoidance mechanism if I was on trial. But the problem is that he can't sleep in private. He's in public. He has the eyes of the world on him, in a way.
I would say that he is having major trouble sleeping at night.
You think?
And that's what is causing this.
So he's sleeping during the trial just because he's getting no sleep at night.
Right.
And why is he not sleeping well at night?
Maybe he's freaking out about the trial. That it's really starting to get to. I mean, he famously doesn't sleep much. He's always said that he only sleeps like 4 or 5 hours.
God.
So if that's the case, and then he's not sleeping well in those 4 hours, then maybe that would catch up to you.
Yeah, that's probably true. And maybe he's run out of pep pills, or maybe at some point they just don't help with that. I don't know.
Yeah, that I don't know.
Well, we'll definitely keep our eye on this in this historic trial, John. This is unprecedented. The criminal trial of a former president. I don't think this has ever happened before. This is very, very interesting. Do you think they'll ever find a jury?
I don't know.
Strike that. I want to strike that question from the record. It was too boring.
Okay. When I'm looking up to see if the trial was televised, I typed in Donald Trump trial. Small amount of trials came up. It was just like, oh my God, this guy.
I mean, he's one of a kind. You can't say he's not one of a kind.
Yeah. Wow.
Meanwhile, it sounds like the Supreme Court is getting ready to rule against the Sarbanes-Oxley interpretation that would allow some of the January 6th rioters to go free, and would also cause prosecutors to have to drop a couple charges against Donald Trump. So that could be good news for him. It could be a mixed bag for Trump this week, legally speaking.
Mm-hmm.
Speaking of bad boys and courts, we have Clarence Thomas, the famous Supreme Court justice and RV enthusiast, the man who knows more billionaires than any non-billionaire.
Yeah.
He didn't show up for court yesterday, and I guess nobody knows why. I got very intrigued by this. This is the kind of news story that can really spark the imagination. NBC News, conservative Supreme Court Justice Clarence Thomas was not present at the court for oral arguments on Monday, with the court giving no reason for his absence. Chief Justice John Roberts, who loves his job and is very confident that his legacy is going to turn out just fine, said in court that Thomas, quote, is not on the bench today, but would participate fully in the two cases being argued based on briefs and transcripts. A court spokeswoman had no further information. John, tell me why Supreme Court Justice Clarence Thomas did not show up for work yesterday.
Some sort of illness. He's the eldest justice.
75 years young.
I would say that it was probably something like that. And
he's like the Pentagon guy who was just the Secretary of Defense was like, I'm going to go have some secret surgeries. Talk to you later.
Right.
Yeah.
He had a procedure, some sort of procedure done.
Right.
What if he had a nose job done? That would be weird. If he had like a weird cosmetic procedure and then he showed up and then he just looked different.
And he would just completely denied it and refused to address it.
Yeah. Like hair transplant surgery or something.
If one of his benefactors, like what are the Harlan Crow or is Leonard Leo one of his guys?
Maybe.
Said, Clarence Thomas, I want you to get a nose job. Do you think Clarence Thomas would do it? Would he submit and say, yes, I shall?
Yeah,
your wish is my command.
He might.
Then he shows up to court and he has like a weird perfect little button nose, like who has a weird little perfect button nose? Nicole Kidman?
I don't know.
You know who Nicole Kidman is?
Yeah.
Heartbreak feels
famous
good
Australian.
In a place like this. Yeah. She does these weird ads to get us to go see the movies. Have you ever seen that?
No.
There's an empty movie theater. She walks in a sparkly pantsuit and she's talking to us about how great movies are. She's in an empty theater and then she sits down and she's saying like, It's like the one thing I remember, she says, heartbreak feels good in a place like this. Like when you go to see like a sappy movie, it feels good, you know, have a cry or whatever. And then she'll say like, even the good guys are, or the, even the bad guys are sexy in a place like this.
What movies was she in? She was in.
Here we go. Here we go.
My favorite movie. Eyes Wide Shut. She was in Dead Reckoning. Was she in that?
I don't know what that is.
Wasn't that when they were like out on a sailboat?
Oh, that sounds scary. Dead Reckoning.
She was in Days of Thunder, of course.
Is that where she met Tom Cruise?
I think so. Yeah.
Mm. 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 She was in a really good movie called Birth. It was really creepy. Have you ever heard of that movie?
No.
It was like a horror movie. It was good. I think that's about all the movies that she's been in. She might have been in a Western that was set in Australia because, like you mentioned, she is Australia.
That's it?
Yeah, I think she's five or six movies.
That's it? And she's like
she
one of the biggest stars in
no,
the world?
No, she's been in like a million movies. Okay. She's always working, I think. Her all name's right. Nicole Kidman. You guys should check her out. Anyway, we're talking about this because we were talking about if Clarence Thomas got Nicole Kidman nose, if he got a nose like Nicole Kidman's.
Actually, you know what? We know this because he is back today.
Is his nose looking any different? Does he have a bandage on his nose?
Nobody has reported that it looks any different, and I imagine that they would report that.
If you got a push alert from the New York Times, it says, Clarence Thomas looking as cute as a button returns to the Supreme Court, you'd be like, oh. All right. Well, there's nothing much to that. Okay. So that's a dead end. So let's keep moving. John, you wanted to thank somebody for sending you something in the mail?
Oh, yeah. I got a street sign in the mail that said, hitchhikers may be escaping inmates.
Somebody sent you one of the signs from our tournament of toughest road signs.
Yeah.
You know what I realized about that sign when we were done recording that special episode for our Patreon? Hitchhikers may be escaping inmates could also imply that the hitchhikers are hitchhiking in order to avoid inmates. They are the ones escaping inmates. It's ambiguous.
Right, in which case you would want to help them.
You would want to help them. It'd be like,
yeah,
pick up any hitchhiker you see. They may be escaping inmates. Rather than don't pick up any hitchhiker you see because they could
because
be escaping
they
inmates.
Are
right.
Escaping inmates.
Something about the language of that sign is a little vague. I wonder if anyone has ever mistakenly picked up an escaping inmate who was hitchhiking because they thought that hitchhiker was actually trying to escape some inmates. That would be the true, that would be that sign operating in its fullest expression. You know, much to consider. We might have to record a second episode, a bracket of the most ambiguous road signs. Because sometimes there are some road signs, and if you've never seen them before, you're like, I can't tell what the fuck I'm supposed to do right now. Mm-hmm. You get so panicked, especially if you're driving in another country. God forbid. Oh, God forbid you drive in another country and you hit some road sign and it says something like, I can't even think, like, ditches may be taller than mountains or something. It's like, I don't know what to do. And then you wish you had taken the bus. But then you get on the bus and you have no idea what to do. God, I'm getting so freaked out. You ever been on a bus in a foreign country and you don't know how much it costs and shit like that? Oh, my God. You yeah. don't know when to get off?
Right.
Oh, God.
I don't know.
Oh, I know. This world is filled with nothing but terror. What? What were you saying?
We were on a boat in China.
We went on a bus in China. We took a bus to the Three Gorges Dam. You don't remember that? It was a bus ride to get there.
Yeah, I don't remember.
We were on the bus with all these Chinese families, and then we showed up at the Three Gorges Dam, and we were so excited to finally see this monstrosity of engineering and infrastructure. And this Chinese kid turned to his mom and just said, I want McDonald's. You remember that? Aaron translated for us. Because I think what happened was we heard the phrase McDonald's. And we were like, what did they say? And Aaron said, he told his mom he wants McDonald's. It was like, how can you think about McDonald's at a time like this, kid?
Right.
What you have is so much more powerful and destructive than McDonald's. You have the world's biggest dam. They flooded so many villages to build this dam and it might break. Like it's already cracking. That's so much more exciting than going to McDonald's.
Yeah, it causes earthquakes, remember?
It causes earthquakes.
Because the water's so heavy.
Because this water is just piling up behind this dam.
Remember going up the Yangtze and we saw them blowing up the villages?
I don't remember that. I can't believe that happened.
No, they were blowing up the villages.
Got to make room for that dam and that water, too.
Yeah.
I've also seen the Hoover Dam. Have you ever seen the Hoover Dam?
Yeah.
Oh.
That was actually more impressive.
It is because the scale... You can take it in, like you can apprehend it in its totality.
I don't know what we were looking at in the Yangtze River Dam. It just looked like might as well have been the Carr Lake Dam.
Ouch. Oh my God, the Three Gorges Dam would be so pissed to hear you compare it to the Carr Lake Dam.
But the Hoover Dam?
Also, the Hoover Dam is more attractive. It has an architectural sensibility. The Three Gorges Dam doesn't really have a sense of panache. Dams. They hold the water back for the benefit of all. Okay. That could be a good motto for dams. All right. What else do we have on this cockamamie outline?
Biden called for an immediate ceasefire.
Yeah, that was a long time ago. I think we didn't talk about it last
time.
Did it
happen?
I don't know. That's a great question.
I don't think it has. I think things are worse than ever.
Well, Iran tried to attack Israel the other day, and then they shot down most of the missiles. Like, it was actually a pretty effective defensive maneuver, it seems like.
Well, it was very weird. Didn't they launch like 500 drones?
Yeah, they're just trying to get anything through, right?
And they said, we're going to launch them.
Right.
Then they did launch them.
Then Biden called Netanyahu and said, you better chill out and not go crazy in response.
And he said, yeah, that's my style.
Seems like Biden handled that particular crisis pretty well.
The drones?
But then on the other hand, we've got Trump supporters at his rally chanting Genocide Joe. So I guess Trump supporters are also standing with Palestinians, huh? John, make it make sense.
Anything is possible.
I can't.
Let's turn to our predictive portfolios. It's one of our favorite things to do. It never ceases to delight and amaze. We have no real change in the presidential market. Biden, 53, Trump, 46. There has not been a catastrophic collapse in Trump's price since the opening of the Stormy Daniels trial. When we go to the GOP presidential nominee market, Trump holds steady at 91 cents. The Republican vice presidential nominee market. And in this market, this is the most dynamic of all of these markets. Tim Scott, who I am proud to support to the tune of 100 shares, yes, leading the pack still at 23 cents. Kristi Noem, who's John's pick, 19 cents. Tulsi Gabbard, 11 cents. Elise Stefanik, 9 cents. I think Elise Stefanik is underpriced. I read an article in New York Magazine yesterday assessing the state of the race for Trump's VP pick, and they seem to think Elise Stefanik had the best chance of being his pick, even though she will not be able to deliver her home state of New York. She is a woman, which I think is more important than picking a black guy, especially with all the abortion stuff that's happening in Arizona, Florida. I think of these women, Kristi Noem, Tulsi Gabbard, Elise Stefanik, Nikki Haley, not happening. Sarah Huckabee Sanders, not happening. It's got to be Elise Stefanik. You know what, John? I'm going to buy 100 shares, yes, Elise Stefanik at 9 cents. What do you think about that?
I just don't think it's going to be her.
Well, who's it going to be?
It's going to be Noem. She's the most attractive, and that's what he'll go for.
You really think it's going to be Kristi Noem?
Yeah, that's what he goes for.
All right, I'll buy 100 shares in Kristi Noem. It's only money, after all. Closer I am to fine. All right, I've done it. So now I am holding 100 shares Tim Scott, 100 shares Kristi Noem. Kristi Noem. Sounds like a breakfast cereal mascot.
Anything is possible.
And 100 shares Elise Stefanik. John, what's got your attention? I see you completely checked out of this conversation. What are you looking at?
I'm just looking at the market, and it's awful. It's boring.
What, the predicted market or the real
market? Yeah, the predicted markets, no.
Yeah, they're still stuck with 15 markets. Speaking of markets, though, Tesla shares have stumbled. We sometimes talk about Elon Musk because you're such a huge fan of his social media platform, but Tesla is really sinking. And for that matter, so is the company that owns Trump social media. Trump Truth, fuck me. Truth Social Media, DJT.
Donald J. Trump Technologies or something.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, apparently all the shorts got hold of that stock, and that pushed it down.
The stocks go up and the stocks go down. The stocks control can turn a smile to a frown. The stocks are white and the stocks are brown. Angels and shit, all together on the town. Stocks. That could be a motto for the stock market. I'm going to make up a bunch of mottos, I think.
Mm-hmm.
I think 2024 is going to be the year of the mottos for me. Name something and I'll tell you a motto. Name something now.
The NCAA basketball tournament.
The balls are bouncing high in the air. The games are here. The games are here. Support your team with flair. Was that good?
Yeah, that was good.
That's a good motto. Oh, God. Is this a nice sound? Thanks to everyone who sent in information about the current state of the race in North Carolina. Trump is just above Biden, but within the margin of error. It really could come down to North Carolina, John. I know we say it all the time.
No. What?
It's not? You're not even going to let yourself wish or hope?
No, it's not going to come down to North Carolina.
Why not? It's a swing
just because
state.
We're not the tipping point state. I mean, North Carolina could – Biden could win North Carolina, but if he wins North Carolina, that means he's also won Arizona and Georgia and Wisconsin, in which case –
I'm telling you, that makes North Carolina important. It's a bellwether, John. North Carolina is a bellwether, okay?
Okay.
It's going to ring your bell whether you like it or not. North Carolina is the big time. Speaking of North Carolina, John, an epic North Carolina bad boy, one of the legends of this podcast over the past couple of years, a fellow by the name of Madison Cawthorn, is in the news as of yesterday. John? This is a stunning development in the career of one of America's most promising young Republican politicians. What happened to Madison Cawthorn?
Well, this news broke on Twitter, and I haven't seen it in any of the mainstream media. Madison Cawthorn was in a car accident yesterday on I-75 southbound in Florida, which is his new home state.
Oh, that's right. He moved to Florida, didn't he?
Yeah. It was reported that he was tailgating some woman for a long time, and she reported that she finally moved out of his way, and he proceeded to speed past her, and several miles later, traffic came to a stop, and he crashed into the back of a Florida highway patrolman, and she saw him get out of the car and realized it was Madison Cawthorn, that the crazy guy that had been tailgating her was Madison Cawthorn.
New York Post says, disgraced former Representative Madison Cawthorn accused of tailgating woman and rear-ending Florida Highway Patrol officer. But this is just one of those articles that's just basically recapping this woman's TikTok video.
Right.
It's not been confirmed that this is Madison Cawthorn. It's just a guy who looks like Madison Cawthorn.
Yeah, I mean,
and we do know that Madison Cawthorn doesn't have the healthiest relationship with automobiles, you could say.
No.
It doesn't look like he's made a statement denying it's him, which I assume he would do if it was not him.
No. So he's in trouble again with the law. When was the last time he was in trouble for?
Well, he's always carrying guns through the airport. That's a huge thing that he does.
Right.
That's one of his kinks. Well, if it is Madison Cawthorn, and to be clear, it has not yet been confirmed that it is Madison Cawthorn, we have to add this to his bad boy tally.
Done and done. Hollywood update.
There's not shit going on Hollywood, man. The scene is dead.
No movies?
I haven't seen a movie since I saw Love Lies Bleeding. I got to go see Dune 2 at some point.
Have you seen Inglourious Basterds?
Yes, I have. I have. Quentin Tarantino.
Yeah. Was that good? I never saw it.
I don't remember having strong feelings about it one way or the other, although I will say that I think Brad Pitt is very bad. I think Brad Pitt has become a very bad actor.
When he's going, Gorlami.
I don't know what that is. Is that from
Gorlami.
The movie?
She's like, these are my Italian friends. And then he introduces himself. I'm Antonio Guarlami. And then the Nazi is not really convinced that he's an Italian.
Brad Pitt got stuck. He got ossified, and he only does one thing now. And if you're not in the mood for it, it's just like, shut up. Like, you know what I mean? Like, I really feel like he's playing these, like, he's kind of like how he was in that other Quentin Tarantino movie called Once Upon a Time in Hollywood. Speaking of Hollywood Update, they made a whole movie about Hollywood called Once Upon a Time in Hollywood. Why didn't he just call it the Hollywood Update? And in that movie, Brad Pitt was like a stuntman in the 70s or the 60s, I guess. I don't know. You know, some of these actors, like, it's just like they I guess I don't really know how to explain it, John, but it's kind of like you just kind of get sick of looking at them. Does that make sense?
Like Tom Hanks?
Never. The okay. Human chameleon? No, I would never get sick of looking at Tom Hanks. It's different. Brad Pitt is different than Tom Hanks. He's very
Tom
it's
Cruise.
Like, no. Now. Watch your mouth.
Okay. Well, can you give us another example other than Brad Pitt?
A big, huge, broad, hammy, winking performances.
John Hamm?
Where the subtext is, don't you guys love seeing me just goof off and have fun? Like, look at this.
Chris Pratt?
Me, Brad Pitt, playing a Nazi hunter. Isn't this a hoot? And listen to my cornball accent. Whoa, we're having a time on this movie, aren't we, fellas? Like that kind of thing. It's kind of like, all right.
Killing Nazis.
I'm not saying it's like the worst thing on earth, but sometimes I just...
Adam Sandler?
But Adam Sandler...
He was supposed to play one of the big roles in
that.
Oh,
really?
Inglourious Bastards. He was supposed to play...
Well, now this is a good Hollywood update.
The Bear Jew, who was the American who... I guess would bash in the heads of the Nazis. Jewish guy. I think they called him the Bear Jew or the Jew Bear.
How do you
know
this? Where'd you get this
TikTok
intel from?
I don't know. TikTok. Oh, you know, they start right. showing you part two of this and then you're like, where's part one?
Love
and
it when you're like you stumble upon part 77 of The Godfather part two on TikTok.
You can't find
it's
anything.
It's like a 30-second clip of Robert Duvall on a sofa or something.
And then you go back and it's like this TikTok only has like two clips posted and like 16 followers. What is this game that they're playing? I don't understand TikTok.
Ours is not to reason why, John. There is, what does he say in that one comic book? There's more in my heaven than could ever be in your understanding. Do you know what I'm talking about?
Ours is not to wonder why. Ours is but to do or die.
Yeah, there's that. And then there's something like there's more in our heaven than you could ever know, you dummy. What am I thinking of? Oh, it's more Hamlet.
Oh
my God. There are more things in heaven and earth, Horatio, than are dreamt of in your philosophy. I'm telling you, John, it all comes back up to Shakespeare. Shakespeare is the greatest genius who has ever picked up a pen in the English language. We have to agree on that. If there's one thing that we can all agree on, everyone who listens to this podcast, I know we have our disagreements about the minutiae of center-left to left-wing politics. I know we have our disagreements about whether guitar pedals are an interesting subject to talk about. I know we have our disagreements about clanking water bottles and whether the correct decibel level is 500 decibels or 600 decibels for clanking water bottles. But let's all agree on one thing. Shakespeare is the greatest genius who has ever written in the English language. Can we please all just agree and say that? Can everyone just stand up right now and yell at the top of their lungs, Shakespeare is number one? I defy anyone to disagree with that statement. I used to have the, let's really just riff on this podcast. I used to have John, in high school, I was a member of the Book of the Month Club, okay? Mm-hmm. Because it was like those Record of the Month Clubs. That first installment, they sent you like 20 books for a penny or something. So I was like, I'll do this. This is great. And one of the books that I got was called Bartlett's Book of Quotations, which was a huge, huge thick paperback of all the greatest quotes in the English language.
Right.
Because I was like, I would like to read why read the whole book? Just read the best quotes. Then you'll be a super genius in like 1/20th of the time. I started reading all these quotes and ingesting all these pearls of wisdom from the whole history of the English language. The number one source of quotes, of course, the King James Bible, right? I mean, when you start realizing how many quotes and idioms and turns of phrase come from the Bible, you'll start believing in God. It's just like so many things come from the Bible.
Right.
I mean, and also the Bible starts off with the most baller opening sentence of all time, which is like, in the beginning, God created the entire universe. What? It's like that could have been the whole thing. That's such a mic drop. The Bible could have been one sentence long and it still would have spawned a religion. After the Bible, the King James Version, the number two source of quotes in Bartlett's is Shakespeare. Mm-hmm. And again, it's crazy how much he infiltrated the English language. Did I ever tell you about the time? I think we talked about this on the podcast, but it's so illuminating. Let's mention it again. I was reading King Lear, and then I was like, I can't read this. I'm just going to watch it. And so I watched a production of King Lear, which is a famous Shakespeare tragedy about this guy, and he has all these kids, and he's like wandering around the woods. I think he loses his mind is what happens. There was some phrase in King Lear where I was like, you can't tell me Shakespeare made that up. Like, you cannot be serious. And you know what it was? Full circle. We've come full circle.
Wow.
I was like, what the hell? What the hell? Shakespeare made that up? This guy runs Bartlett's Book of Quotations. And what's amazing is the King James Bible was written by committee. You got Matthew, Mark, Luke, John. You got Leviticus chiming in. You got all these people. Paul's writing letters to the apostles and the Pharisees and whatnot. Then the devil gets his say in the book of Revelations. The devil wrote that chapter, in case you don't know. Mm-hmm. Shakespeare's just one guy, and he goes head to head with the Bible, and it's just him. It's so funky to think about.
What do you think of people calling him Bill Shakespeare?
I've never heard that. I would slap them across the face with my
glove.
You've
never heard that?
Bill Shakespeare, what, to be funny?
I don't.
It sounds like something a Brad Pitt character would say in a Quentin Tarantino movie. What do you mean, Adolf? You never read old Bill Shakespeare? Then he'd like pull out his knife. Well, there's a thing called to be or not to be. Shh. Are your nuts to be or not to be connected to your dick? And then he would cut off his nuts. Right. Like right there. Right there. It's all right there.
Yeah.
Bill Shakespeare. I don't like it. I think people should treat Shakespeare with respect.
I think so, too.
And I don't like people being like, actually, he didn't write half those plays. This other guy did. No, he did. And Shakespeare was a genius. Just live with it. Some people can't stand to see a star shine in the sky. And friends, Shakespeare was a true shining star. I mean, this guy. Mm-hmm. And he like anticipated all this psychological stuff. He was like writing these human characters that are like Freud hadn't even been born yet. Do you know what I'm talking about?
Mm-hmm.
They had a whole play about where some kid turns into a goat to have sex with people in the woods in Midsummer Night's Dream. So it connected to Midsummer, your favorite movie.
Oh, that's good. Yeah.
It all comes back to William Shakespeare. And then people are like, actually, you should read John Donne. John Donne is actually pretty. No, he's not. Shut the fuck up. Shakespeare smokes everybody else, and nobody comes with 100 miles to Shakespeare. Because John, not only did he write plays, and I think he even acted in his plays, which is so insane. I think he was the star of his plays. Can you? Not only did he do that, he also wrote like sonnets and stuff. He wrote poetry. I mean, this guy could not be stopped. And because he lived so long ago, he probably was like one of these people who was dead by the time he was like 42 or something. You know, like, oh.
No, I bet he lived longer than that.
How old do you think Shakespeare lived to be? I bet he did not live to be 60 years old. Let's look it up. Shakespeare. I'm getting so excited about Shakespeare. I know this is like one of the hottest takes ever said that Shakespeare is really good, but I stand by it. 52 years old, John. He died at 52.
What year?
1616. Oh my God, John. We have 1 year to equal the work of William Shakespeare.
Yeah.
1 year left. Less than a year, because we're both turning 52 this year.
Yeah.
Oh, my God. We've come full circle, John. To be or not to be, William Shakespeare. Oh, my gosh. And that's not even to get me started on the numbers. I've started my numbers class. I have so many things to say about the numbers, but we'll wait for a different episode where we can really focus on the numbers. I'm learning about the difference between, like, when they talk about number theory, what are numbers? We got the Platonists, we got the formalists, and we've got the intuitionists. I still don't know which one I am. Still trying to figure out these numbers. Did you know, John, that there's some communities, some tribal communities that don't have a number, their numbers, they stop their numbers at two and their counting system is one, two, and many. Mm-hmm. It's pretty accurate. They'd be pretty good presidential pollsters. Margin of error, any value greater than two. I mean, it's really wild. And some animals also have a number sense, but very, very few creatures, including humans, have a number sense beyond five or six. After five or six objects, you really actually need numbers,
right,
to apprehend how many of something there are. It's incredible. And John, did you know that the reason there's 60 seconds in a minute and 60 minutes in an hour is because of the Babylonians? From like 10 million years ago, they had a base 60 counting system.
It's terrible.
Because 60 is divisible by so many fucking numbers. 60 is divisible by 2, 3, 4, 5, and 6. And we're sitting here futzing around with base 10, which is divisible by 2 and 5.
You really are learning a lot.
I'm a fiend for these numbers. I want to write a musical that premieres on Broadway where tickets cost at least $1,000. And it's just called Let's Sing About the Numbers. And you know who the main character is? William Shakespeare, because it ties together all my interests. Shakespeare comes out and he's like, words, words, words. I'm so sick of all these words. Where is the truest poetry in the numbers, sir? That's said by one of his little assistants. I need to create an equation that's twice as beautiful as Hamlet. I need to create multiplication and subtraction tables that are as moving as King Lear and the Tempest. Numbers shall be my truest expression of my deeply held beliefs about man and all of nature and God's wisdom. And then all these mathematicians are going to chime in. The Babylonians are going to be like, base 60 is the way to go. Divisible by so many goddamn numbers. Base 60 is number one. Anyway, I'm going to work on that. And John, what else do you want to talk about?
I got nothing. Anything is possible. How about we do listener questions?
John, why don't you read this one from Ross, which is kind of calling me out for a mistaken assumption I made about Laura Trump's song and the grift.
Ross writes in, on a recent episode, David said that Laura Trump hit single, Anything Is Possible, couldn't be a grift because there's no money in music streaming. While mostly true, there is one way to make some money from music online: iTunes sales. Now, I'm sure you're thinking, what is this, 2005? No one's buying music on iTunes. But this is actually a fairly common MAGA grift that works precisely because no one really buys music on iTunes. For the last few years, MAGA musicians have tricked people into thinking that they would seriously own the libs by getting MAGA songs to number one on iTunes. I googled Laura Trump iTunes and found an Eric Trump Instagram post congratulating his wife for making it to number two on the iTunes charts. She also claims iTunes was shadow banning her. There's even a whole crew of MAGA rappers pulling this grift. The most popular one is named Fogiato Blow, and he's the grandson of the guy who started Auto Trader or something like that. I've been fascinated by this weird niche grift and thought you all might find it interesting as well.
Thank you, Ross, for this corrective. This makes absolute sense to me. This is another example of people using culture, you know, as a proxy battle for political stuff, but also the fact that As some populations move on from one type of technology or distribution, other people remain. I mean, ironically, like I don't subscribe to a streaming platform. I still buy songs on iTunes. So in a way, I'm like this MAGA demographic.
Interesting.
Who are buying the Laura Trump song and running it up the charts. And I have Bandcamp. So I guess that's kind of streaming. But with Bandcamp, you have to buy their record. The streaming services just fucking freak me out how little money they give to people. But it also means like I'm never exposed to new music.
Right.
Which is why I only listen to Laura Trump's song, Anything Is Possible, because it's the only new music I've heard in the past year.
It's an earworm.
But thank you, Ross, for that note. But I still insist this is not a grift as much as it is a passion project. She is our generation's Elliot Smith. Let's leave it at that.
Okay.
Enid writes in with some audio of Corsican blackbirds at dusk. This is from northern Corsica. Let's give it a listen. And we're back.
Jen writes in, David, I thought I would send this pic of Matthew Sweet's pedal board from the show I'm about to see in Pittsburgh. I have no idea what any of them do, but I hope you like them.
This is what I hope will become a new feature where listeners send in photographs of musicians' pedal boards from concerts that they've gone to. Doesn't that sound fun, John?
That one looks like a Tube Screamer down there at the bottom right. Looks much like how I remember the Tube Screamer looking.
John, I have to congratulate you. That is a reissue of the Ibanez Tube Screamer that
you
remember. Aaron had an original Tube Screamer in our high school band, and that is the Ibanez reissue. So good eye, John. So, Matthew Sweet. Do you remember that musician, Matthew Sweet? Do you know of him?
No.
I associate him with like 90s college rock, like power pop. So because of the musical tradition he's working in, we wouldn't expect to see a lot of really far out or funky pedals. And this pedal board confirms that. This is a pretty standard pedal board. What we're looking at here, Jen, is the Voodoo Labs Pedal Power ISO 5, which is just the block that powers all the pedals. So instead of having five different plugs running into the wall, you put them all into this power block. I have a couple of these. We start with the Boss Chromatic Tuner. This is the TU3. I believe this is Boss's best-selling pedal of all time. I could be wrong. I have one of these. This is just so he can tune his guitar on stage. Then, as John's eagle eye has pointed out, we have the Ibanez Tube Screamer reissue. This is an overdrive pedal. Then we have the Boss Blues Driver, which is another sort of overdrive pedal to make the guitar feel kind of saturated. Then we had a pedal I had never heard of. I had to look this up, a mini pedal, the EP Booster. Now, this is another kind of, not an overdrive pedal, but a boost pedal based on an old Echo pedal, the Maestro Echoplex, but it doesn't reproduce the echo part. It just reproduces the preamp that was in that device, which I guess created a nice sparkling sound or something. I guess a lot of famous guitarists would use this echo pedal just for the preamp. So this pedal company decided to just focus on that and reproduce that preamp, and that's what this EP Booster is. Finally, the only somewhat funky pedal is the MXR Carbon Copy Analog Delay Pedal. So pretty straightforward rock and roll pedal board, Jen. Thank you for sending it in. I hope the concert was fun. Anyone else going to a concert, send me photos of the pedal boards so we can analyze the pedal boards. I would say this is not a pedal board that I would be interested in using, but I guess for what Matthew Sweet is doing, it makes a lot of sense, and I admire how stripped down it is.
Kevin writes in, the Koki frog is an invasive frog found on the Big Island of Hawaii. It is native to Puerto Rico, but arrived in Hawaii in the 80s on imported nursery plants. It's known for the nighttime song from which it draws its name, Koki. While they are only 1 to 2 inches long, their call can reach 100 decibels.
Unbelievable.
Please enjoy this recording my wife made on the Big Island's East Coast. 100 decibels? Wow.
Let's check out these invasive frogs. I mean, for an invasive frog species that can get up to 100 decibels, it sounds kind of relaxing to me. But I guess that just proves that nature sounds can be just as misleading as the lies that come out of human mouths. Write that down. Shakespeare probably said that too. All right, John, are you ready to do the top tier city thing, or what's going on with this?
Yeah, let's do it.
Really? You ready?
Sure.
Raphael writes in, I'm a new fan of Election Profit Makers, but I quickly fell in love after the recommendation of a close friend who's a longtime listener. Cameron is the friend's name. Thank you, Cameron. I wanted to pick your brains about a topic that has driven a rift into our friendship. What do you define as a first-tier city? We have attempted to develop some criteria to establish these tiers, but we failed to come to a consensus. Some suggestions include vibes, population, distinct culture, presence of a professional sports team, skyline, established nickname, and maybe an international airport. Mm. Just considering U.S. cities, the first tier cities off the top are New York City, Los Angeles, Chicago, San Francisco. But, he asks, what about Las Vegas, New Orleans, Houston, or Seattle?
No.
John, let's talk about this.
I have thought about this a lot. And yes, there are a lot of things. I mean, one thing is size of the city.
You mean population or actual land acreage?
No, the population of the city. Okay. And that goes with saying it's how important it is. But also, yes, I think world-class educational institutions are important. Fortune 500 companies are important. Major League Sports, obviously, are a signifier. But for me, it also has to do with how important a city may be regionally. Is it a leader?
Mm.
You know, so, you know, say a city like Charlotte has Major League Sports and, you know, it's where a Bank of America is based and it's got one of the busiest airports in the world. And yet, just a few hours down the road is Atlanta that has a bigger airport and more Fortune 500 companies. And so to me, Charlotte will never eclipse Atlanta.
And so it can never be a first-tier city. It will always be in the shadow of Atlanta.
Yeah, and Philadelphia can never be as well.
Oh, I don't like hearing that.
Whereas a city
Philadelphia is more of a first-tier city than Charlotte, because there's one thing we haven't talked about, which is history.
Yeah, I know. History is important, but I think a place like Seattle could potentially become a first-tier city.
Oh, my God. Get out. Seattle?
Because it could dominate the Northwest and be regionally so important, whereas Philly is always going to be second fiddle to New York.
But if a city is merely regional, it could be a regional first-tier city. It could be a first-tier city in the Pacific Northwest. But we're talking about first-tier cities, aren't we? Like on the national and international stage.
The list that they came up with is very good. I think the only other city you could potentially put on that list would be Miami. I wouldn't put Miami on that list. But I think the first-tier cities in the U.S. are number one, New York, and number two, Los Angeles. So there is a group called the Globalization and World Cities Research Network that does this type of thing. It's a think tank, and they
have you applied for a membership?
I don't know if you can do that or not, but they look at city classifications and they break them down, looking at world cities like alpha and there's alpha plus plus cities.
Here we go.
An alpha plus city. A beta city, and it, you know, goes down to gamma plus. Like Charlotte is a gamma plus
city.
Jesus,
along that's brutal. With, it's all really. It's
yeah. It's along with.
That sounds like what is that? Like fifth tier? How many rankings are there?
Well, I mean, I'll just tell you. Baltimore is a gamma plus. Medellin, St. Louis, those are Glasgow. Those are other gamma plus cities. There are only two alpha plus plus cities. You know what those are?
In the world?
Yes.
Oh, my God. I'm going to say New York and Tokyo.
It's New York and London.
Oh, London.
So, but they look at the relationship.
The home of Shakespeare.
Yes. They look at these cities and the relationships they have to one another in terms of globalization. So the connectivity they have through advanced producer services and accounting and advertising and banking and stuff like that. So it's ranking them more heavily on economics than, say, political or cultural factors.
Cultural factors, I could see – I mean – Boston is not a first-tier city, but Boston is definitely a second-tier city because so many brainiacs come out of Boston, and it's just got so much like
right
intellectual influence and science.
Well, they've got Boston
stuff
listed as an alpha-minus city, which
is
like, you know, one
pretty
of the
good
top. Yeah, one of the top 20 cities in the entire world.
Right.
So Boston is ranked very high. They're ranked there with Bangkok and Buenos Aires and San Francisco. Los Angeles and Chicago are alpha, up there with Mexico City. And mm-hmm.
But your rankings, this guy is asking, what do you consider a first tier city?
I mean, for me, you got to have a huge airport.
Yeah.
You got to have a great skyline. You got to have Fortune 500 and you have to have.
But what does Fortune 500 mean? Like multiple Fortune 500 companies?
Yeah.
Just like big economic bases that are private capital?
Absolutely.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right.
So I think I lean heavily on that. And the cultural aspect, I mean, when I'm looking at like big cities in North Carolina, that's one thing that hurts Charlotte, I think, because it doesn't have like a giant, you know, Research One. I think UNC Charlotte actually is going to be a Research One university in the next several years. But, you know, comparing it to like, say, Columbus, Ohio, which has Ohio State University, or Atlanta that has Georgia Tech and Emory and all these other type things. I think that's kind of a really important thing for me for a first tier city.
What is the biggest, least important city?
That's a good question. That's a really good question.
You want a week to think about it?
I mean, it depends how you would define big, but I think Kansas City is not an important city.
Oh my gosh.
I don't think Charlotte's that particularly important.
Well, right. I mean, it's important because it has a lot of banking, but when you think about a city's importance in that kind of grand, vague sense, capital I importance, like,
right.
What's Charlotte bringing to the table? A bunch of banks?
I don't think Orlando is that important, but culturally it's hugely important because of Disney. But
oh, interesting. I would not consider Disney part of Orlando. I feel like Orlando is kind of skating on this private metropolis that operates kind of independently of it, right?
Well, I would say Orlando's not very important.
Okay.
You could say Phoenix as well, but Phoenix is so large now that at a certain point you have so much gravity of population that you're just important in terms of your size.
Hmm. Much to consider. Thanks for listening, Raphael.
Yes, thank you.
John, it's another kind of scattershot episode, but that's okay by me. How do you feel?
I feel great about it.
Oh, well, then by all means, let's conclude this episode before we really stick our feet in our mouths. Anything is possible.
Election Profit Makers, it is an independent production, and we welcome your support on Patreon at patreon.com/electionprofitmakers. If you sign up for Patreon, you'll receive some wonderful EPM stickers in the mail. You'll also get an invite code to our private Discord. Send your election prediction questions, skyline requests, and bird recordings to contact@electionprofitmakers.com. And if you want to advertise with us, email contact@electionprofitmakers.com.
We'll talk to you later.
Bye. I'm